For this reason, Klusky prefers to hold seances only every 2 weeks, as they are too strenuous for him. Evil, once it has gained admittance to such a gathering, through the shortcomings and the ineratitude of the medium and the other participants, and has found its activities appreciated and welcomed by them, will not budge from there. It does as it pleases, not what the participants want, and not infrequently perpetrates unmitigated mischief, at times creating frightening scenes that can be terminated only by closing the seance. The situation is well described by the words of the poet: "The spirits that I summoned up, I now can't rid myself of." Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, the sorcerer's apprentice. Worst of all, the medium's health is undermined little by little. This is why a great many strong mediums fail completely after a time, since so much of their odic power is taken from them during their seances by the low and evil spirit world and is not replaced. Once a medium's odic power is gone, the phenomena cease. Such mediums are then exposed to a new danger, to which many of them fall victim. 216. Accustomed as they are to being highly regarded as important mediums, they do not have the humility and love of truth to openly admit the loss of their mediumistic powers, and so they try to conceal this loss by resorting to trickery and deceit until they are exposed. Exposures of this kind are then seized upon by the ignorant to brand the whole issue of spirit communication as a fraud and a swindle. On this score, a heavy responsibility rests on all those who, when attending spiritistic meetings, do not see to it that from the outset everything is done in the name of God, and that all evil is barred. If a seance is regarded and conducted as a meeting for divine worship, those who attend it have nothing to fear from demonic influences. The forces of good are in control, and only that which is in accordance with God's will is admitted. One cannot, therefore, be too emphatic in warning against spiritistic seances that are held merely out of sensationalism or scientific curiosity and not in an endeavor to come closer to God through communication with the good spirit world. Professor Polowski's observation that the odor emitted by the higher spirits was pleasant and sweet, while he perceived an offensive smell like that of a wet dog during the materialization of the great ape, fully confirms what is said earlier in this book regarding the smell of odd. Professor Polowski's account concludes with the following remarks: "It is impossible for anyone to deny or to reject these phenomena, or to explain them by ascribing them to sleight of hand performances. I fully acknowledge that it is difficult for most people to believe them, that it is hard to conceive of the possibility that, in the space of a few minutes, living human beings appear, whose bones can be felt through their flesh, whose heartbeats can be heard and felt. I admit that all these things are beyond our comprehension. We have been spoiled by the marvels of modern science. We can, no longer, believe in natural things, presented to us in all their beauty. We can no longer believe in the secret of universal life, in the divine secret that is so carefully guarded from us. To admit the possibility of these things would revolutionize our entire perspective of life and death, as well as that of philosophy and the sciences. 4. Scientific authorities will acknowledge the great mass of experimental material already available and will lend their hand to the establishment of the truth, regardless of those moralists who see in the acknowledgement of psychic phenomena a menace to morality and religion. Intellectual cowardice is more or less excusable in moralists, whose narrow. For the translation of this passage has been corrected to accord with the original Polowski article in the Zeitschrift für Parapsychologie. Grieber's German text contains a citation error here. 217. Outlook concerns itself more with short-lived things, which are fleeting for the people at large. No scholar, no seeker after the truth can afford to take such a view. In the end, truth will conquer and rule all things. One need, however, neither fear nor belittle it. Carlos Mayra B.E., The Brazilian Medium, Zeitschrift für Parapsychologie, 1927, pages 449-462. In 1927 there appeared in Santos, Brazil, a book entitled O Medium Mayra B.E., containing a 74-page account of the phenomena observed with a medium of that name. These phenomena all occurred by daylight or at least by bright artificial light, at times in the presence of as many as 60 witnesses from the leading scientific and social circles of Brazil. Inasmuch as the reports include the most incredible phenomena as yet experienced in this field, the editors of the Schrift für Parapsychologie inquired of the Brazilian consul in Munich whether the persons cited in the book O Medium Mirabe as bearing witness to the truth of these phenomena were known to him by standing and reputation. The consul replied with an emphatic yes, adding that he was personally acquainted with 14 of the witnesses named in the book, among them the current President of the Republic, who had acted as the chairman of the Board of Arbitration concerning Mirabe. The consul furthermore named the Secretary of State, Reinaldo Porchat, Senator Muniz Sadr, and Oligério Damra, professor of medicine at the University of São Paulo, and declared that if only these four men, who were not only great scholars but persons of proven character, speak out for anything, it was not for him to doubt the correctness of their perceptions. Mirabe was observed by 557 witnesses, 452 Brazilians and 105 foreigners. They included 2 university professors, 72 physicians, 18 druggists, 12 engineers, 36 lawyers, 8 translators, 3 farmers, 22 dentists, 5 chemists, 20 writers, 89 statesmen, 25 military officers, 52 stock marketers, 128 merchants, 9 manufacturers, 18 journalists and 32 people with other occupations. In addition, many members of religious orders attended the séances. Mirabe is a universal medium, his odic power being sufficient for all types of spirit communication phenomena. He is a speaking medium. While in a state of trance, he speaks, besides his mother tongue and several of the local dialects, German, French, Dutch, English, 4 Italian dialects, Czech, Arabic, Japanese, Russian, 218, Spanish, Turkish, Hebrew, Albanian, several African dialects, Latin, Chinese, Modern Greek, Polish, Syro-Egyptian dialects, and Ancient Greek. In his normal state he knows only his native language, while in a trance he holds lectures on subjects about which he as a human being knows nothing. These lectures deal with the fields of medicine, jurisprudence, sociology, political economy, politics, theology, psychology, history, the natural sciences, astronomy, philosophy, logic, music, spiritism and occultism, and literature. According to the medium's own statement, nothing that he utters while in trance comes from him, but from spirits that speak through him and whose names he willingly gives. He calls them his spirit guides. Mirabe is also a writing medium. To date he has written in 28 different languages, while in trance, setting down his words at a speed no writer in a normal state can equal. Thus in 15 minutes he wrote 5 pages in Polish on the resurrection of Poland, in 20 minutes he wrote 9 pages in Czech on the independence of Czechoslovakia, in 12 minutes, 4 pages in Hebrew on slander, in 20 minutes, a German composition on Greater Germany, its downfall and resurrection, in 40 minutes, 25 pages in Persian on the instability of great empires, in 15 minutes, 4 pages in Latin on great translations, in 12 minutes, 5 pages in Japanese on the Russo-Japanese War, in 22 minutes, 15 pages in Syrian on Allah and His Prophets, in 15 minutes, 8 pages in Chinese on Buddhistic Apology, in 15 minutes, 8 pages in Syro-Egyptian on the Fundamentals of Legislation, in 32 minutes, 3 pages of hieroglyphics that have not yet been deciphered, and so on. Mirabe's mediumistic writing was done under the supervision of scholars who took the following measures to guard against fraud. The medium was led by 2 investigators into the séance room, where his clothing and body were carefully searched. Paper and pencil were laid on a small table that had neither drawers nor compartments. Mirabe, who is always in a state of great agitation before such séances, sits on a chair in bright light. His examiners and the other participants form a circle around him and follow all his motions closely. The presiding member then calls for silence until the spirit guide of the medium announces its presence. The medium, now in a state of great ecstasy, calls loudly for divine aid, and, in trance, begins to sing a hymn. His hand seizes a pencil, hurls it away repeatedly, grasps it again, and falls to writing feverishly. The pencil glides over the paper at lightning speed without stopping. While writing, Mirabe'e turns his eyes upward and sighs, without any reduction of the 219 speed at which his pencil travels. Then, with a radiant look, he gazes straight upward, where he claims to see his guiding spirit, which guides his hand while he writes, and with which he converses affectionately. A secretary standing beside the medium takes up the sheets of paper as they are written, and keeps them in proper order. It sometimes happens that the medium state passes from ecstasy to apathy, and then undergoes yet another change. Mirabe'e seems quite beside himself, laughing, weeping, singing, calling out names, answering questions, turning and twisting about like a tightrope walker, spitting right and left without regard for anyone, assuming indecent postures, trying to run his head against the wall, or to drink chemicals, frothing at the mouth and striking out in all directions. In the end he grows calm, and the séance can be concluded. The manifestations just described should be explained before we proceed. The agitation of the medium before a séance is caused by the great number of spirits, good and evil, that crowd around him and force themselves upon him in order that they may guide his hand, knowing that he is about to write. A battle ensues between the good and the evil spirits, as evidenced by his seizing, throwing away and again picking up the pencil. If the evil forces get the upper hand temporarily, they use the medium's body to commit the improprieties of speech and behavior mentioned above. The power of evil is bent on accomplishing the physical and moral ruin of medium serving the good cause. Mirabe'e endeavors to attract only the good spirit world and to serve as its instrument, as proven by his prayers for divine assistance, but the fact that he also lends himself to séances held only to satisfy the scientific interests of the participants, and in many cases merely their sensationalism, is an error on his part that gives the evil spirit beings a great hold on him. Were he to confine his activities to religious gatherings exclusively, thus devoting his mediumistic talents only to the cause of good, the forces of evil would have no power over him and the low and vulgar exhibitions he makes of himself would never occur. Moreover, his mediumistic power would be maintained, while it is to be feared that it will dwindle little by little if he continues to lend himself as a medium for worldly purposes. The weakening of his odic power by the evil spirits will assume such proportions in the long run that he will fail utterly as a medium, and also lose his physical health entirely and possibly be driven to something even worse. 5. This fear has unfortunately been proven justified. Mirabe'e has today completely lost his mediumistic powers. Note to second edition. 220. The strength that the evil spirit forces occasionally develop in order to hinder the efforts of the good spirits is illustrated by events recorded in the Bible. When the archangel Gabriel had been sent to reveal the future to Daniel, the evil spirit that ruled over the idolatrous kingdom of Persia tried to prevent him from doing so and fought with him for 21 days, until the archangel Michael came to Gabriel's aid and delivered him from the attacks of the forces of evil. Daniel 10:13. Mirabe'e is a physical medium. At the Assis Pharmacy, Ra 15 de Novembro No. 9, in São Paulo, the panes of glass suddenly flew out of the showcases while the medium was present. A skull with movable parts came out of the laboratory, remained suspended in the air, opened and shut its jaw, threw various articles about, flew back and forth, and finally fell to the floor without breaking. At a gathering held on a national holiday and attended by the medium and many other persons, they, as well as people who did not attend the gathering, but who lived nearby, heard the roll of drums and the blare of trumpets, playing a march. At the same time, glasses and bottles standing in the assembly hall were clinked without being touched by human hands, and gave out sounds that were perfectly harmonious, rendering a military march with wonderful musical skill. Marabi'i played billiards without touching his cue, which made the strokes of its own accord. A skull moved its jaw, and a hat that had been placed upon it was raised as though in salutation. All of these facts were confirmed by unimpeachable witnesses, the original document stressing the point that all references to doubtful phenomena were excluded from the start. At a well-attended séance in Sound Vicente, the following happened in the presence of the guests of honor, Dr. Mario Alvin and Dr. Annibal de Meneses. Marabi'i was seated in a chair, closely scrutinized by all present. Suddenly the chair, with the medium, moved from its place, without being impelled in any way by the medium's legs, as was definitely established. Marabi'i turned his eyes heavenward, spread his arms, and sat as though enraptured. After a few minutes of silent prayer, the chair again moved with a sudden start and rose several centimeters from the floor, all the while closest attention was concentrated upon the medium's feet, arms and sides. The chair continued to rise with the medium, floated to and fro, and finally reached an elevation of 2 meters above the floor. Those present immediately re-examined the séance room. The levitation lasted for a counted 120 seconds. The investigators following the chair as it floated. 221. Unsupported in the air. It moved in one direction and finally descended slowly back to the floor, landing at a distance of 2.30 meters from its original position. All the while the medium was in trance and spoke with different spirit beings. Upon awakening, Marabi'i could recall nothing of what had happened. As has already been explained in the chapter on mediums, physical phenomena are usually the work of low, although not necessarily evil, spirits. Generally speaking, good spirits do not lend themselves to experiments like those of Marabi'i's physical phenomena described in the preceding section. They may occasionally participate in such performances if a divinely willed purpose is involved, as, for instance, that of providing evidence of the existence of spirits from the beyond to a person seeking God. Marabi'i is an apport medium. From the residence of Pinto de Queiro in São Paulo, a revolver that had been locked in a trunk was apported into the residence of a Mr. Watson, after the announcement had been made that this would be done. Furthermore, a picture was apported in broad daylight from Mr. Watson's residence over a distance of several kilometers into the office of an insurance company, where it fell to the floor with a crash, causing immense excitement. On another occasion, Marabi'i was at the De Las railroad station with several companions, on his way to taking a ship to Santos, when he suddenly vanished. About 15 minutes later, a telephone message came from São Vicente, a city 90 kilometers away from De Las, stating that the medium was present in São Vicente exactly 2 minutes after he had disappeared in São Paulo. On the occasion of a session of the investigating committee held in honor of Dr. Enrico de Gozan, attended by many scholars, Marabi'i vanished from the séance room without untying his bonds and without disturbing the seal on any of the doors or windows. He was found lying on a sofa in an adjoining room, still in trance and singing a hymn. These so-called apports fall within the domain of dematerialization and rematerialization of matter. Matter is disintegrated and converted into odd at one place, transported through walls and closed doors in that state, and recondensed into solid matter elsewhere. Several instances of the same process are recorded in the Bible. The prophet Habakkuk, who was brought from a great distance to Daniel in the lion's den, the disciple Philippus, who suddenly disappeared from one place and instantly reappeared in a far-off city, the freeing of Peter from behind locked prison doors, all of these. 222. Things happened according to the same laws of dissolution and recondensation of matter as in the case of the medium Marabi'i. Marabi'i is a materialization medium. The materializations produced by Marabi'i are the most powerful exhibitions of spirits taking on bodily form witnessed in modern times. What follows happened at a séance held in the laboratory of the investigating committee in Santos, over which Stanis Lauda Camargo, Alberto Rivera and J.F. Schmid presided. This séance, which took place at 9 o'clock in the morning, was attended by many people of note. The hall in which the experiment was conducted was situated on the ground floor and was 10 by 11 meters in size. The windows opening on the street were locked with iron bolts. The floor was composed of narrow wooden boards, which had been examined one by one to make sure that they had not been set up for trickery. Everything was found to be in order, and it was definitely established that the only way of forcing an entry into the room would be to break through its thick walls or the doors framed in stone. Myra B.E., seated in a chair, turned pale, indicating the beginning of a deep trance. His eyes bulged and he twisted about as though someone were trying to strangle him, while beads of sweat stood out all over his body. Suddenly, three sharp raps sounded on a table that stood in the hall, and a child's voice called out, "Papa." Dr. Ganymede D'Souza, one of those present, declared with great emotion that he recognized the voice of his little daughter, who had died of influenza in the capital city. Everyone sat in tense expectation, and presently the figure of a girl appeared beside the medium. Hardly able to speak, her father stepped out of the circle, called her by name, went up to her and folded her in his arms. Amid sobs he assured the others again and again that it was his daughter he was holding, and that the dress the apparition was wearing was the dress in which she had been buried. All the while, Marabi lay as though in death agony, cowered in his chair, his complexion waxen, his muscles completely lax, his breathing weak and wheezy, and his pulse barely perceptible. Colonel Octavia Vianna now rose to convince himself of the reality of the apparition. He also took the child in his arms, felt her pulse, looked into her deep, unfathomable eyes, and asked her several questions, which she answered rationally, although in a sad, monotonic voice. Vianna also confirmed that the apparition was real. Dr. D'Souza then mentioned several childhood incidents in his daughter's life to the apparition, receiving replies that showed that his remarks were understood. The apparition was 223. Photographed. A copy of the picture was included in the investigating committee's report. After the picture had been taken, the child began to float about the room, rising into the air and tumbling about like a fish in its native element. The spectators had risen to their feet and followed the apparition, which remained within an arm's reach. The medium meanwhile imitated the child's motions with his forearms. She floated about in the air a few seconds longer, and then disappeared all of a sudden. She had shown herself for 36 minutes by daylight and under unimpeachable conditions to a gathering of educated men, who testify that they saw before them a perfectly formed human being. Dr. Ganymede D'Souza lost his daughter for the second time, so deeply was he moved by what he had seen. The minutes recording this occurrence were signed by 10 PhDs who had been present, to certify the truth of its contents. The medium continued to tremble and show signs of great exhaustion for some time after he had overcome the intense nervous strain caused by the phenomenon described above. Even before he had regained his strength, hefty blows were heard in a cupboard in which a skull used as a specimen for study was kept. The skull was being angrily hurled about inside by an unseen force as though trying to break out of its place of confinement. One of the participants was hastening to the cupboard, intending to open it, when suddenly its doors swung apart of their own accord, and out shot the skull, rising into the air and chattering its teeth hideously. Dr. Ganymede D'Souza was wondering to himself why the rest of the skeleton did not appear, when, as though in answer to his unspoken thought, the vertebrae of the neck began to form, followed in order by the bones of the chest and arms. The entire spinal column, the pelvic arch, the legs, and finally the feet, complete to the last bone. At this the medium, held by both arms, erupts a mass of frothy saliva and, still seated in the chair, beats angrily at himself. All of his arteries seem bottled up and throb violently, while his body diffuses a sickening, offensive corpse-like odor that so pollutes the room that not even fresh air succeeds in driving out the smell. The skeleton now gets up on its feet and starts to walk about the room with long, unsteady strides, occasionally seeming in danger of falling, but always managing to regain its balance. To assure himself that it is real, Dr. Ganymede D'Souza touches the apparition and taps its hard, greasy bones. As he does so, He feels a shock rack his nerves, and returns to his seat. Meanwhile, the medium squirms about in his chair and can be held only. 224. With difficulty, the skeleton continues its weird stroll. Other participants, encouraged by Dr. Ganyam D'Souza's example, overcome their horror and get up one after the other to touch this dismal personification of death and nothingness. All of them are shaken by the occurrence. The corpse-like smell lingers on. While the minutes are counted, the skeleton begins to disintegrate slowly, beginning at its feet, until only the skull remains floating in the air, its jaw no longer chattering, until it falls to the table and stays there. All this occurred at 9:45 a.m., in bright sunlight, under controlled conditions almost as though the police had stood guard, in the presence of many educated persons, and lasted for 22 counted minutes. While the spectators were still discussing the events related above, the medium again fell into a state of agitation and declared that he could see present in the room the figure of Bishop José de Camargo Barros, who had lost his life in the shipwreck of the Sirio. All conversation quickly ceased, and Marabiu was again put under the prescribed supervision, conducted this time by Messrs. Atlibida, O. Arana and Odacio Sampaio. The scent of roses filled the room as the medium passed into a trance. Suddenly there appeared within the circle a fine mist, on which all eyes were immediately fixed. The mist parted and became denser, gleaming like a golden cloud, out of which, as the minutes were counted, there gradually emerged a smiling apparition wearing the episcopal beretta and clad in the full insignia of office. Rising from the chair, it announced, in a loud voice audible to everyone, its name, Dr. José de Camargo Barros. Those present made sure that they were not being deluded. Dr. Ganyam D'Souza got up, fearlessly approached the apparition, and stopped directly in front of it. The apparition said nothing, but smiled at the investigator, who now went even closer, touching and examining it minutely by tapping its body and teeth and rubbing his finger over the gums to determine the presence of saliva. He listened to the heartbeat and to the breathing, applied his ear to the bishop's abdomen to assure himself that the bowels were functioning, examined fingernails and eyeballs, paying extra attention also to the capillaries, and resumed his seat. There was no question in his mind that the figure before him was that of a man. The other witnesses followed Dr. Ganyam D'Souza's example, and the mysterious guest was equally obliging to all. Everyone was certain that no frivolous hoax was being played on them, but that it was in fact a human being with the organs of a normal human body that stood before them. The 225. Bishop conversed with those present in pure, refined Portuguese. Finally he said, "Now watch me closely as I disappear." With this he went back to the chair of the medium, who was still in a deep trance, while the spectators intently observed every motion, so as not to miss the most interesting part of the phenomenon, namely the dematerialization. On reaching the medium, whose trance continued unbroken, the bishop bent over Myra B.E., laid his hands on him and regarded him silently for a while, as those present gathered in a circle around the two of them. The bishop's materialized body contracted spasmodically several times and then began to disappear, shrinking bit by bit. The medium, bathed in cold sweat, was breathing with a loud rattle. The vision then shrank to a height of about 30 centimeters and vanished with indescribable suddenness. Again a strong, sweet scent of roses filled the room, and Marabi slowly regained consciousness. The subsequent examination failed to yield any natural explanation of the occurrence. At Santos, the headquarters of the academy, a seance was held at 3:30 in the afternoon, the results of which are attested to by 60 signatures. First, an apparition of a woman appeared, who engaged in conversation with those present and then vanished. A few minutes later a bell rose into the air and began to ring in silvery tones. Myra B.E. awoke from his trance and claimed to see an awe-inspiring figure clad in white linen and surrounded by a shining aura standing beside the table. Meanwhile, the bell in the air rang incessantly. Several spectators who had been sitting at some distance now rose and approached the circle that had been formed by the investigating committee. Presently a sound was heard like that of a person's heels brought down firmly on the floor, whereupon Colonel Sawyers and Dr. Octavia Mora Cavalcanti announced the presence of the deceased Dr. Basilio Menezes, well remembered by all as an eminent hospital physician.